This episode was brought to you by Google Cloud, a partner that needs no introduction. What you might not have heard of, though, is that Google offers a Google for Startups cloud program where they give you access to startup experts, technical training, business support, and cover your Google Cloud costs up to $200,000 for 2 years, or even $350,000 if you're an AI startup. Scale your startup faster and smarter with Google Cloud. Head over to goo.gle/Swisspreneur.
Through our programs, a lot of people also find jobs. So we actually support the government in doing what they should do, you know, because in general, people who come here, they're unemployed for 8 years. That's insane. They have so much to offer.
Welcome to the Swisspreneur Show, a podcast about startup stories and learnings from experienced entrepreneurs. If you enjoy listening to our show, make sure to follow the podcast and leave a rating. And now, here's your host, Sylvan.
Seraina, a warm welcome to the Swisspreneur Show. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you, Sylvan. I'm really honored to be here and thank you for giving me the platform.
Our pleasure. You're the co-founder of Singa Switzerland, an incubator for projects built by people with a refugee or migrant background. And you were a project scout at the Migro Pioneer Fund, the development fund of the Migro Group. Before we talk about your ventures, I want to jump right into your background. You studied international affairs with a focus on international law, and then you went on to work for organizations like the UN and also the Munich Refugee Council. When did you first feel called to do this line of work?
Good question. So I think I was always interested in social justice issues and also in working in the international field. So in school, I already read some biographies, for example, by Dag Hammarskjöld, the second UN Secretary General. And so I was always interested in that. But I think, and then also at the end of school, I did a thesis on integration of Muslim migrants in Germany. So There was kind of that interest to maybe explore that area of work. But it's also, to be honest, a bit opportunity. After my bachelor's, I just looked up, what's out there, and applied randomly for this UN internship in Malta. And
so sort of a mix of reasons.
Yeah. Yes. But I think, you know, when I look back now, because sometimes you don't see how things happen, there's not always a logic. But the one thing I see as a red thread kind of is my interest in justice, you know, whether it is now in health or in international law or when it comes to social issues. I think that's kind of the thing that connects all the dots. Yeah.
Fantastic. And what do you think, what role does entrepreneurship play in empowering people of a refugee and migrant background? Is that something that we absolutely need, or do you think that entrepreneurship sort of falls short in really helping and supporting them?
I think it's a great way, first of all, because in many areas in the world, it's very normal to be an entrepreneur. Like it used to be normal in Switzerland, right? Nowadays, a lot of people are employed, but it used to be completely different 100 years ago. And I think it's a perfect way to empower people because, first of all, it provides a livelihood, but it also gives them an opportunity to be creative, to use their skills, to connect with others, to create something that is their own. And I think often in Europe, there's this idea of like refugees or people who have that experience. Oh, they're helpless people who have nothing to offer. And if we look at Switzerland, actually good example, some of the biggest Swiss companies have been started by people with a refugee migrant background. You know, from Rolex to Nestle to ABB, all of those companies. Even Ovo Maltine is not from a Swiss person. This is something, you know, people who leave their country, who look for a better life or just to survive, they have incredible strength and creativity. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here.
And if I get you correctly, then entrepreneurship can really be a great way to express and leverage that drive and energy.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's take us back to 2016. That was the year when you founded Singa Switzerland, together with Miriam, your co-founder. Singa originally comes from Paris, and I think it was started there in 2012. And new chapters have sprung out all over the world, basically. So why did you, you know, what did caught your attention to really then join and start Singa here in Switzerland?
So I met the co-founders from France, Guillaume and Nathaniel, 2014 in Geneva, and by chance at an event, and they told me about it, and we kept in touch, and they knew I had worked with the Munich Refugee Council, and I had ideas about, you know, not always providing social or legal assistance or support to people who have come here as refugees or migrants, but also doing something about the economic opportunities. Mm-hmm. So they asked me, would you be interested in starting a chapter in Switzerland? And I was like, ooh. I never saw myself as an entrepreneur first. I always knew I want to start something of my own, but I thought, with 27, I'm too young. I don't know why. I don't think, you know, I think you should be an entrepreneur anytime. But at that time, I didn't see it. So, and I was also a bit frustrated with my job in war crimes investigations, which I think had a lot of purpose, but it was very tough political work. You know, you work on cases for 20 years. You don't really see anything being done. Yeah. So I was motivated to do something with more impact, direct impact. And I think it was good that I didn't know what it means to build up something, because I, at some point I was like, just out of frustration and curiosity, I was like, okay, sure. And I had no idea what I'm doing. But yeah, that's how it kind of started.
Fantastic. And it was, again, your sort of sense and sort of strive for justice that caught your attention.
Absolutely.
to that project.
Absolutely, yes.
And how does that work? You know, then for how long does Singa actually support projects, and what does the whole process look like with your work there?
Yeah. So, you know, over the years, it has changed. Originally, and for the first 4 years, it was like that we offered a program for 6 months, mm-hmm, with like weekly workshops on, you know, finances, marketing, legal aspects of founding a company in Switzerland. And then also we provided a mentor for each participant for, mm-hmm, 6 months. So now it's similar, but we have an incubator and we have an accelerator. We also have kind of an online program to make it even more accessible, because we are always in Zurich and Geneva. Mm-hmm. First in Zurich, but then we scaled quickly to Geneva. And then we always had people asking from Bern or St. Gallen, and because of their limited financial capabilities, we decided, oh, we extended to the online format to make it more accessible.
Yeah.
And then people need to have certain language skills. So, you know, ideally B1, either in German, French or English, depending where they are. There's a limited fee, like 50 francs or 100 francs per month, depending on your income. But if you cannot afford that, we also sponsor it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so we also do networking events. We have a lot of corporate volunteers, actually, who provide one-to-one sessions in different areas. You know, we have people who are marketing experts or finance experts. So, mm-hmm, we actually rely on a lot of volunteer work.
that makes sense.
Yes.
And how does the program of such a cohort then look like? Like, what is the curriculum? What do they go through? What's the sort of the content that you provide them with?
So we have these workshops and also online tools, but it's really, you know, everything from what's your business idea? Let's test it. Let's test, mm-hmm, it with a target group. Let's look at the financial feasibility, you know, have like a market study. Like we do all of that. Then we look at all the financial planning, the budgeting, the what's the best legal structure to set it up. So we have law firms who then do these workshops. Mm-hmm. We also look at a lot of communication topics, because that's crucial. You know, if you're an entrepreneur, you need to be able to communicate it. Branding, yeah, basically anything that you need to start your own business. So we have, over the years, we have changed the setup. Okay, what comes first, what comes last? But those topics always kind of remain the same. And the interesting thing is, what people say they benefit the most of is not even what they learn from mm-hmm. us, but the network.
I imagine.
No. So they say, you know, in general, they make 30 new contacts that they can contact anytime afterwards. And that's what's getting them off the ground.
That's super valuable.
It's always about network, anywhere you go in the world. And that's also interesting. You know, it's always the same. Things here are not different. And let's say I move to Jordan next week. I need a network.
Yeah.
Before I need to know how the local law works. Yeah. Right?
So, exactly.
Same learning here.
and who actually can apply to, you know, become part of that program?
So anyone here who has this gets technical, FBC permit, unfortunately not asylum seekers because they're not allowed to start a company. But, you know, for example, a lot of people from Syria in Syria, unfortunately, a lot of them just got an F permit. So they just get a temporary permit, but they can start a business.
Okay.
So they need to meet these legal requirements. They need to have an idea or want to join a team. And we also accept people from Switzerland, Europe, and EFTA states if they join a team from our main target group. Yeah. So, and then, of course, the language requirements that I mentioned. But sometimes, you know, this is a tough part because people have very different language skills. But yeah.
And from the people who can apply, who actually does apply, are these people who used to have their own businesses in a different country before they came to Switzerland? What's sort of the background of the people who apply?
Good question. So quite a few used to be entrepreneurs already or serial entrepreneurs. You know, we have quite a few people who already, from Ali from Syria, for example, he had a company, the last company he had like 400 employees, you know, he's done big stuff and he's already started two companies here now.
Nice.
So, but then there is also people, mostly highly qualified people, to be honest, who cannot work in their jobs anymore, like doctors, engineers, all of them, they would have to go back to university to get a Swiss degree. They don't have the time or the money for that.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, we also have, you know, all kinds of people. And what I'm proud of is that 50% of our participants are actually women. So we do quite a lot to reach out to women as well. And another thing I noticed, a lot of them have children, men and women. Yeah. So right, over 60%.
Fantastic.
Which I think is also great motivation for them, you know, to...
I want to make it.
Yes, absolutely.
Of course. Yeah. And what are sort of the businesses that they then start here in Switzerland? What do they do? What do they offer?
Yeah, very good question. We always get asked that and people say, do they start a kiosk? Or, and I was like, no. So first, when we started, we wanted to focus on tech businesses. But then we realized, okay, this is too ambitious or also too one-sided. Let's put it that way. So we have a whole range of businesses. By now, around 40 businesses have been developed out of Singa, and they still exist.
Nice.
It's not mostly the typical startup. There is a few. There is like an IT company that develops 3D services, mainly for the watch industry, but also other industries.
Wow.
It's by a Syrian participant. That's kind of a startup, but the other ones are smaller businesses that can be from catering to fashion to a lot of services. For example, that's actually, I think, really interesting business that was developed in Geneva by a Brazilian woman who saw a lot of parents are overwhelmed with their children, young children, and she developed a service. It's called Nurse de Nuit, so night nurses. And it got picked up by the canton. They said, oh, this is actually great because a lot of socially disadvantaged families and young families struggled. And it's kind of an established business and program now there. So, you know, also innovative things that exist maybe abroad, but we don't have them here in Switzerland because maybe we don't come up with these ideas or we don't see it. But so yeah, there's also this kind of business and people who sell different things. But I think there's a lot in the service industry. And check out our website. They're all listed there. Coffee businesses as well, like people who just roasting coffee and yeah, anything.
Amazing.
You can think of
a big variety of different businesses.
Which is also a challenge, right? Because we always need to match them with experts in that field.
Sure.
It's not always easy.
So you help them not only with the network, but also with the know-how and the whole legal setup. Yes. However, there are, of course, many more challenges that they face. For example, they also need some capital, right, to start the company and probably make some investments. How do you support them there?
It's the biggest challenge of all, I think, globally. I observe also all these kind of programs around the world, and that's the biggest problem we all have. Access to capital, yes. So some of them, so we have some money that they can win at the awards, but this is very little money, 5 to 10,000 francs, right? Mm-hmm. But let's say a lot of the people know what to do with very little money and have the maximum impact on it. Yeah. But it's something we've been talking about with politicians here, with banks, you know, how do we offer more opportunities? Mm-hmm. How do they get loans? In some instances, we look, some of the mentors have invested, you know. So we try everything, but it remains a challenge. Yeah. And it also stops them from growing faster. And, you know, even in Switzerland, even women struggle to get the same funding as men. But with this group,
it's a whole different level, I imagine. Yeah. Yes. And at the same time, I feel you do want to give them the money, but mm-hmm. at the same time, you also want to probably have more of an investor set up that it stays business focused and, you know, you need to deliver a return or something, right?
Yes. And I think what they need is more time.
No.
And the kind of return of investment pressure that is on generally on startups, they cannot deliver on that. And also a lot of the businesses are small micro businesses or family businesses where maybe they just need a loan, you know, maybe they just need 20,000 francs and I'm going to pay back to you or the bank. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is very tricky.
I imagine.
Yeah. You have ideas, I mean, we've tried many things and I think it gets better, but it remains a huge challenge.
Absolutely. You probably also face a similar challenge with Singa itself because you're an association, a nonprofit. How do you get financed and funded? Because you also have operating costs to cover.
Absolutely. So in the first 4 years, we only took private money. We had mostly by corporate foundations. So that's actually interesting. That's why even right-wing politicians supported us because supported, not publicly, but they told us, no, that's a good thing as long as you don't take tax money, you know, and they create their own jobs and maybe jobs for others.
But we
also thought about different ways to, you know, set this up more as a business, but it's very difficult with our target group. You can't, you know, even if we take shares, it's not going to provide enough revenue. So we haven't done that. We looked into that. What we're doing now is that the government, the state, the administration sees more and more what kind of service we provide because through our programs, a lot of people also find jobs. So we actually support the government in doing what they should do, you know, because in general, people who come here, they're unemployed for 8 years. That's insane. They have so
much. Crazy.
They have so much to offer and we don't see that. And we get them into the market and they actually create jobs. So now, sometimes in Geneva and Zurich, the social services cover the costs, which depending what is like 9,000 francs or 10,000 mm-hmm. francs actually per person that we now get through foundations. So there is some income, but we also, you know, at some point we were 7 people in a team when I was still co-director and now we're 4 because also foundations tell you, oh yeah, that's a cool thing. But now we want to do something new. We're focusing on nutrition mm-hmm. and, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a funny market to be in. Yeah. And that's also why we're an association, because people always feel it's immoral if you're a business when you're trying to support someone. It's a very weird.
Do you agree with that statement?
No, not at all.
Not at all. It depends on what outcome, what effect you have, right, as a company.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've done a lot of big workshops and stuff for banks, some of the biggest banks we have in Switzerland to mm-hmm. get, you know, they want to volunteer and they want to do something for their corporate social responsibility. And they always ask us to do this stuff for free. Yeah. That's really wrong. I was like, this is my work.
Of course.
But this is the thinking. You know, people tell it to your face. They're like, oh, yeah, but you should work for free. I'm like, no.
I'm not. No, hell
so
no.
So I stopped doing it. I was like, either you pay or we're not going to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. There's value in what you do and that should be equally compensated as in
absolutely.
The free market.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Talking about that, you know, if you look at your career, you could have easily had a conventional high-paying career at any corporate, law firm, whatever you choose, you would have probably gotten it. So why did you decide to go down the unbeaten path?
Well, you know, I think something, it's good to find out early on in your life what motivates you, right? And okay, first of all, I do come from a privileged enough background that I never had to really think about can I afford to study and so on. I didn't have, you know, I had a small room when I studied, whatever, but I could study. All of course. This is already a luxury, yeah. Right? So I want to say that because I don't want to come across as arrogant for people who really had to struggle financially. And they say, for you, it's easy to say you don't care about money. I do care about money, but I realized early on, it's not the main thing that motivates me. Mm-hmm. Because at the end, you know, if you think about it, 8 hours a day on average, you work, and I'd rather do something that I'm actually interested in with people that it's fun with, because for me, like, you know, making a living is not the same as like making a life. Making a life is the thing I care about. And I don't differentiate between my free time and work. I want to enjoy both of it or think of it as having a purpose, you know? And so that's maybe why I was drawn into that direction, because I realized, I like to work with people who want to make things better or prettier or more fun or fairer. And usually, I don't know, it wasn't the corporate side that then provided that for me. But there's also really cool people in the corporate world.
Of course,
I don't want to say that.
Yeah.
But and I guess the whole thing about, making things more just, but that you can also do in a corporate setting.
Sure. Depends where you go.
Yes, absolutely. But for me, and then the last thing maybe is that I like to work with international teams and people who really think and care about the world. And so, it attracted me more to the international organization and NGO world. But then with Migro, you know, at the end, I worked for the biggest corporate in Switzerland.
With a very Swiss focus.
Very Swiss focus, which sometimes was hard, but I learned a lot. I mean, I think it's always cool to learn new stuff.
And absolutely. I want to talk about that in a minute. Before we do so, you know, when you have your career and you have studied with peers and then they went on to these corporates and probably, you know, made a very decent amount of money, you're building something that intrinsically motivated you. And of course, you could cover your living costs, but at the same time, was it sometimes difficult, or have you sometimes regretted that you went down that path when you then compared yourself to your peers and saw, they have, I don't know, much higher salaries, or they are traveling all around the world? But was there some sort of regret at a certain point in time?
Never financially, but I do have a few regrets. From the first years when I built up Singa, you know, everything in my life was about work, to the extent that I went to my sister's wedding completely stressed out, not even giving her a gift, but not saying anything, not, you know, preparing anything, not a speech, nothing for a wedding. I deeply, deeply regret this, that I let this kind of work take over so much of my life, to, you know, lose sight of other things. Also, I didn't make, you know, much money, and I didn't travel much in the first years. But I think because I was mostly so busy with people around me, but also with a lot of corporate people. Yeah, sometimes I thought, this is just wrong how much they make for their work and how much we make. But more in terms of, it's so random what kind of value we give certain jobs and not others.
Of course.
Yeah. That's maybe the main frustration. But I didn't really, I mean, you know, I have such a broad spectrum of friends around me, so that there is everything. There's people who make $500,000 and people who make much less than me. So I don't know. And thank God I'd never felt envy financially. No.
Yeah, that's good. No. You mentioned something important, that your job sort of took over, at least for some time, sort of your whole life. Yeah. You know, sometimes also entrepreneurs of all sorts, if you have this intrinsic motivation, you want to change something, you are so motivated to make this project or this company a success, and then this can happen. Your work life takes over your whole life. That is a struggle. How do you deal with that these days? What did you sort of take away and learn from it? Because I imagine many other people can or are struggling with something similar, no matter whether it's a nonprofit or a startup business or whatever it is.
Yes. And, you know, I think what happens when you get so consumed in your work, and I actually had that also in my job before when I worked in war crimes investigation, because the work was endless, but you start only seeing that, right? Mm-hmm. And you think that's the center of the world, and that's what's really dangerous. And before I decided that I will leave Singer, at least in my role as director or co-director, mm-hmm. I took a month off and I went to the US to see friends and also travel on my own. I wanted to know, who am I without my job, without my boyfriend, without my friends?
How was that?
Very good. And I actually realized, I hadn't been on my own for like 4 days in many years. Mm-hmm. And I actually really liked it. And that's when it became crystal clear to me, I need to leave this job. Also, I need to make room for others. But what I think, you know, is important to realize that, you know, I was thinking, I'm not saving lives. And also, even if I am, but if I die tomorrow, nothing really will happen. Just all the people who love me will miss me. But that's it. You know, you're not that important, which is also a big relief.
Absolutely.
You know, So I really take that. Like, even now when I get stressed, I think about it. I'm like, take a walk, go to the forest. Spend time with friends. I think that's one of the most important things. Stay social, not on your phone, but make sure you see someone every day who's not related to your job. I think that's a good way to keep healthy.
I like that.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to, you know, stop seeing the forest because of all the trees around you, right? And you just double down and forget that, there's another life out there too. Yeah. I also want to talk about another topic. If we zoom out a bit, you yourself took many risks, you know, of the path that you chose as a career and also different projects that you got involved. But you have also been exposed to risk by the people that you work with, what they went through. So when can risk benefit us and really push us to our best self? And when does it become a purely negative stress factor for us?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think that's also something that everyone should ask themselves. Because I think it's different things for everyone. But in my experience, I think stress is good if it takes me out of my comfort zone, not, you know, just so I'm uncomfortable, and if it makes me a bit nervous and challenges me. But it's not good if it's an existential threat, you know, or if it... is a risk that, for example, would destroy your relationships or, I guess, you know, let's say I don't have children, but you have children and it puts your children at risk. Coming back to the relationship. So I think, and if it takes away your base, whatever your base is. So for some people, it's having certain time for themselves or financial things. You know, I think it's different for everyone, but... I think stress is good if it makes you feel a bit uncomfortable. And uncomfortable is not like, I'm losing my mind, you know?
Of course, yeah.
But like, And you know, a very good thing, one of my colleagues told me at my job with Justice Rapid Response, she said, when I thought about starting Singer, and for me, that was a huge risk. Because those people told me, you don't know what you're doing. You're not an entrepreneur and you're not, you know, I'm Swiss, but I didn't grow up here. I had zero network in Zurich. And they said, like, how can you set up something here? And my colleague said, you know, you're too young to be comfortable. And that for me was like, you're right. Okay, I'll do it. You know, and that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a nice push.
Yeah. At the comfort. That's good for me.
Exactly. I think that's a good, for me, it's always when stress is, you know, keeping me up at night, when my sleep gets really bad and I don't sleep well anymore, that's when it's too much.
Do you have that a lot?
No, rarely, very rarely, luckily.
But that's very good. That's a very good indicator. Yeah, you're
when that happens, I see it immediately and then I know, shit, I need to change something. That's not good.
Yeah. Yes, agreed.
And I think in general, it's always stress is good, but you also need de-stress, you know, to relax, recharge. It's this, you know, sort of back and forth and it keeps you flowing.
Absolutely. I think like the moment when your health is impacted or sleep, it's so essential, because also if we don't sleep, we make really crazy decisions. And
exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
You talk about Switzerland. You also started and founded Singa in Switzerland. And here, I hope it changed a bit over the past years, but we still have this negative perception. You already said, you know, some people told you not to do it. You're crazy. And even if you then would fail, that would be even worse. And people say, oh, no, you failed. It didn't work out. What a terrible story. How do you see that? Are we still, you know, afraid of failing and therefore don't even try here in Switzerland?
Yeah, you know, honestly, this was my biggest fear the first 3 years. And I think that's also why I was panicking if I didn't answer an email within 6 hours, because I felt like no one will take me seriously in Switzerland. I'm not from here and I'm a woman, you know, stupid things that you think. But
sure.
So, and I did also fail because my co-founder, Miriam, who is amazing and helped to really get this project off the ground, but also decided after less than a year she would leave. And that for me was a big fail. And I almost, I thought like, oh my God, now, you know, everyone will think the worst of me. So, and in that sense, I was very Swiss, or I don't know if you can say that, but like I was worried about the social aspect of it, not the financial aspect. So, and I think it's still a little bit like that, that people are afraid of having to say I didn't manage more than I lost 10,000 francs.
Sure, yeah.
But I do think, at least from what I hear and all the startup circles I'm part of, that there is a lot more conversation on that, and also more conversation on mental health and all of that. But it's still, it's not so much public topic. You know, I think we still have room for improvement.
Absolutely.
Luckily, do you see it?
Yeah, very similar. I relate to what you said before, you know, then you did this trip, but then you realized, oh, in the end, you know, my life, of course, I want to do good, but it doesn't matter too much in the whole universe. And I feel this year is very similar, that people are usually much more self-absorbed than we think. Mm. And therefore, they don't really care too much about what you do or what, you know, what you think. Of course, they talk if you fail with a startup, but in the end, they're way too much self-absorbed. So people, I think, care much less than we think in our head. Everyone is looking at us. Well, probably not.
100%. And people forget very quickly. They talk about it 1 second, and then tomorrow they forget about
it. There's new news, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
That always helps me to then not go crazy and say, you know, in the end, I don't matter too much, and probably also what I do doesn't matter too much. So I just try to give my best, and that's all I can do.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think maybe we also have a strong culture here of this is the right way and this is the wrong way to do it. You learn it in school, right? You get like marked on like, this is a mistake. This is right, this is wrong. And it's something that we kind of need to get out of people's brains, but it's not easy.
It's not. Yeah. But while this is a very Swiss experience and perspective, you have also worked with people from all over the world. Mm-hmm. Do they have the same limitations, or do they have a different approach to failure, etc.?
Yeah, I think, you know, for most people, and also met through Singa, but also my American friends, and so I feel they're much less concerned about the social aspect of failing. They're like, whatever. In the US, it's even considered something good. Right. One investor told me once, I wouldn't invest in you if you hadn't failed before. Then that's, you know, I want people who've done stuff, who been brave and took risks. And that's,
that's so, the all in US perspective.
That's a very US. But I also noticed from a lot of people from the Middle East, they don't really care so much about the social aspect. It's more like, first of all, half of them are like in Syria, half of the population are entrepreneurs, right? So it's very normal. You start one business, you do the next. And it's more you don't want to lose too much money, right? Because it could be an existential threat. But the social aspect, what others think about you, it's felt like less of a thing. Yeah. And here I feel it's the main thing. Yeah. Also, you know, we have a huge safety net as a Swiss person.
You're not going to be on
the street if it doesn't work out. But you have to say, oh, my company didn't work out.
Yeah. So it's, again, a huge privilege that we basically have here in Switzerland. But it's, again, also a bit counterintuitive from my perspective. If you have the safety net, why don't more people risk it and actually start their own businesses?
I agree. And I don't know how it is now. But when I was a child and a teenager, I didn't have much exposure to entrepreneurs, also for some female entrepreneurs. Didn't really know many. So I think visibility matters. And that's why I love that now there is much more going on in that direction. But I think if you see that as a child, as a teenager growing up, it's like, oh, this is an option. So many people do that. I think that will change something.
Of course.
And so I think we should do much more with students and schools and so on. I've done once a project like that and it was so cool. And I feel also they have so many great ideas. And we should just say, yes, do it. We should all support them, you know.
Of course. What was the project called?
This was with an NGO that unfortunately doesn't really exist anymore, Euphoria. And they did this impact project. So they invited young entrepreneurs to schools of applied sciences, Fachhochschulen, and then the students there, but they were really young, you know, like 17 or so.
Right, yeah.
18, they could come up with a project over a week, and then we just shared what we did, and we would just listen to them and answer their questions, but mainly we listened and supported them. And some of the projects they even realized, you know, small scale things. But I was thinking like, wow, there's so much potential. We should just cheer them on and not tell them, oh, have you thought about this or this?
Exactly. Encourage instead of putting them down.
Yes, I really believe in them, you know, always.
That is sort of, a bit of a Swiss culture thing, I feel. We often tend, at least that's my perspective, on the negative or on what can go wrong.
On the risks.
Exactly. Then really encouraging people and seeing the potential upside. This is just how we are a bit.
Yeah, and it also has a good side, right? Like a lot of things here work and we're very cautious. Yeah. But I think when it comes to, creativity and innovation in businesses, it's especially with young people, like, what can go wrong? The business can go wrong, you know? Yeah. But this is one of the things I love with the Migro Pioneer Fund, you know, we would scout projects and support, find pioneers and entrepreneurs, any age, you know, 50s, 60s, but also 20s. And here I find in Switzerland, and even myself, you know, you think of like, oh, can a 20-year-old start a business? And one of the projects I worked with was like these three young men. They're 23 now, but at the time they were 22, and they were at a Waldorf school, so alternative schooling. But one of them, he worked on this thesis about a fungus that can grow on different biological waste and turn it into packaging material. And anyway, the other two ones were like, oh, this is really interesting. Cool. Now, making a bit advertisement for them, I realized they're called Microbes, but now they have like this AG and the company they grew, they have like 15 employees.
Wow.
The pharma company wanted to buy them. They're like, no, we're going to actually make this an open source patent at some point. And they're like really one of the most promising sort of sustainable, ecological, really innovative startups in Switzerland. And they all quit their studies after 3 months, went into a basement and stayed there for 2 years and figured out the stuff, you know. And their parents are like, yeah, sure, why not? Because like, yeah, you're 20, you know, do it. Yeah. Like if you're passionate about something, yeah, take that risk. Yeah. The worst thing is like, it didn't work out. And then you still can do something
You go
else.
Back to university or whatever, right?
Yeah. But these kind of people, it's like really rare. We almost never find young people who take that risk.
Exactly.
Most people go straight to getting an apprenticeship or university. Sorry, that was a little detour.
No, it's perfect. It's a good role model, a good story that we can use as inspiration.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the Migro Pioneer Fund, and Singa is supported by the Migro Pioneer Fund. But then in 2022, you actually decided to switch sides and go there and work yourself at the Migro Pioneer Fund. Why did you feel that this change was necessary?
Well, I didn't plan to work there. Basically, I left Singa as a co-director in 21 and decided to go back to school, to university, and I did this master's in public health. Because I was like, I'm really interested in that and I want to learn again and I want to dive into a new field. But I also stayed with Singa as a board member, and even now I still do quite a bit of work for them, for us. not them, but, you know. And then while I was doing my studies, I first focused on that a lot. And then I was thinking, I want to go back to work and find something interesting. And then people from the Migra Pioneer Fund said, hey, we actually have a job opening. And it would be so interesting if we had someone in our team who'd been supported by us, comes from the other side, comes from the project side. And I said, well, if I can also do some public health stuff, why not? So it was more like by chance. I never planned that. No. So, yeah. And it was a really cool experience. And I, you know, I was always advocating for the projects way more than the Migros side.
Absolutely.
But yeah.
Can you tell us a bit more about how the Migros Pioneer Fund actually works?
Yes. So it also was set up in 2012, and you know the money is coming from different Migro businesses like Migol, Migro Bank. They have around 15 million francs a year to spend, so it's quite a lot of money. And you cannot apply, but they scout projects.
Okay.
But I say that now. You can look up who are the scouts. You can contact them. You can get the attention of the Migro Pioneer Fund, and I really encourage people to get the attention because all the scouts are really curious, really interested. They listen, you know, and of course, and the really bold people, they just reach out to them. But I think there's a lot of people who feel like, oh, I cannot apply, and they never reach out. And I want to encourage those people to reach out. But there is a requirement, so they do support projects, mainly financially, but, you know, with really, I would say, really great funding. It's hard to get anything like that in Switzerland, and you're quite free in how to use it. Usually they support the projects for 3 years, but, you know, financially, but also with communication, on a business plan, everything. You get a lot more than money, but mainly money, which is great, right?
All of us
need that. And they have different topics they focus on. You can look it up on the website, but climate neutral society is one, you know, anything related to making our world more ecological, any business ideas, startups. You can also be already an established startup. Right?
Okay.
And then technology and ethics is one. So there's several algorithm projects, but they all have to have in common that they contribute to a better society long term, right?
Yep.
It's not just if the business is just about making profits, that's not enough. It has to have some needs to develop a, I don't know, product service that also benefits society, and it has to be based in Switzerland, but doesn't have to be Swiss people.
Okay.
So you can also have maybe a branch abroad. So
great. Yeah.
Check out the website or reach out to me. I'm very happy to help anyone who wants to.
I think that's really an undervalued potential source of financing for many projects out there.
Yes. And, you know, I saw several projects, the ones I supported, like they got big investors afterwards because, you know, you get this, it's kind of risk money you get from your Pioneer Fund. And in that sense, they have nothing to lose. They don't take shares or anything. All you need to do in return is to say you've been supported by them.
Yeah. So sounds like a good deal. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Let's also zoom out here. You made this decision to move on, and you have done that in your life before, but you're also going to do it again in the future. How and when do you decide when it's the right time to move on from one project to the next?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, usually it starts with an itch. I think it's two things. Either it's opportunity, but for me, it was also always before that an itch of like, oh, I need something new. Like, let's say the tasks get too repetitive or I'm not challenged enough. I do like a challenge. For me, thank God, I always work with fun people. So I never had a problem with a team. That was never the reason to move on. But what do I do every day? And in that sense, yes, I don't even want to spend 5 hours doing something that I find completely useless.
Of course, yeah.
And I'd rather do something 10 hours that I find interesting.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't care if I work 5 or 10 hours, if it's something I really believe in. And yeah. So yeah, if there is frustration, if there is an itch, that's that's the time to move on. But I also think sometimes you need patience. Mm-hmm. It's not my strength, definitely not. But I learned that something it can be good to, if you don't have clarity, to keep going, because mm-hmm. eventually you will get clarity.
No.
But sometimes you need a lot of patience.
Fair. This yeah. itch that you mentioned, I assume that this starts small, but then builds up and mm-hmm. it gets bigger and mm-hmm. bigger. And then I see, okay, this itch is building. I want to change something. Mm-hmm. And then I see the opportunity coming along the way. And that's probably then when you have a certain threshold of how big the itch is or the need for change. And there's an opportunity that seems interesting. That's when you then jump.
Yes, absolutely. And to be honest, you know, so far in my life, I always decided when I leave.
Mm-hmm.
Until this year, which was a really tough experience for me. So I started with Migro Pioneer on a limited contract, and I actually liked that. I was like, oh, this is great. I do this a year, maybe 1.5 years, and yeah. then I'm maybe going to start something again. Or,
right.
But then when I did the work, I was like, I actually really like this.
Mm-hmm.
And not forever, but I was like, I can see myself doing this at least 3 years or something. So when my contract was nearing its end, I told my boss, I was like, I would love to stay on. And she's mm-hmm. like, yeah. Would love to keep you, but you know, this person's coming back from the sabbatical and we're limited, we can't do much. And in the end, you think yourself, oh, can't I really do anything about it?
Mm-hmm.
But it, in that sense, it was against what I wanted.
For the first time.
Yes, yeah. Also very wholesome experience. It was yeah. very tough for me, but I also realized, huh, okay, that's what it feels like.
I imagine both times when you left, you know, at Singa,
yeah.
basically your own baby that you
yes.
built. And now also at the Migro Pioneer Fund, when you left, but you actually would have loved to stay on a bit. How challenging was that emotionally? Both very different exits, so to speak, but I imagine both quite challenging in their own ways.
Yes. So Singa, I told my co-founder and co-director a year before I left. I was like, I'm in a year, I would like to move on. And we also got support, like older, experienced woman who's actually been in the corporate sector, but she was also coach. And, you know, we went through that, like, oh, how do we do this? Also, you know, how do you then really leave properly, even if you move to the board? Like, I took a break. I took a 2-3 month break, and then I moved back to the board. And mm-hmm. I was very cautious to not... Yeah, it's a tricky thing to do, you know, because you feel so emotionally attached. How do you also stay out of it? Yeah. Because for me, that's one thing I always knew, is like, I don't want to be one of those founders who stays on too long. And especially with Singa, I'm really glad that we started with a more of a Swiss team, and now it's all people with a migrant refugee background who actually run this organization, as mm-hmm. it should be. But yeah, that was difficult. You know, I was always like, and thank God I had her, because she would give me very honest feedback. One of the things I think is so important as an entrepreneur, but also if you work anywhere, to have people that are honest with you
mm-hmm.
in a respectful way. But it will also tell you, you know, this is difficult. You need to work on that. I'm so grateful. And Tina Erb, shout out to her. She's been the best co-director and person to work with for me, because she was always very honest. So that, you know, we had a whole process and we got mm-hmm. external support. With Migro, yeah, that was a tough one. I think there it was hard for me to not take it personally, to feel like, maybe they could do more. And they always told me, look, we really appreciate you, and it's nothing to do with you. But then it creeps up.
Of course,
you
it gets
know?
To you, yeah. Of
yeah.
course.
So yeah.
It's like a personal defeat.
Yes. And there I had some conversations with people that were really helpful. But
mm-hmm.
and yeah, I also talked to a coach a few times. Yeah. But in the end, it was also good, just when I left, like I took a break, a proper break, and went hiking in Scotland.
Yeah, that's
I hiked it out. And now, you know, and then I was like, okay, now I'm ready for the next thing. And yeah. now I am in the next thing, and I love it. And I actually am glad it all worked out like this.
Yeah.
I'm totally happy to be where I am right now.
This sort of personal defeat that we just talked mm-hmm. about, is time the best cure? That you just need some time to recover and, you know, sort of distance yourself from it, or did some specific actions or tactics help you more than just time?
I think, honestly, sometimes to take distance from it helped me. But everyone is different, right? But for me, I was like, also, I loved the team so much, and it was hard to be with them because from the moment I knew I can't extend my contract, it was still 3 months. And so, yeah, distance. But I also think, keep going forward, like not wanting to go back. For me, that's the essential thing. Like, look out, what else is there? But to be honest, I'm not good with like being all in something and then look for the next thing.
No.
So for me, it's like I didn't even really look for a job during that time because I was still. I loved all the projects I worked with. So I was like, I'm going to give it 1,000% until the last day.
And then you see.
And it was also a bit risky, you know, because I was like, I need money after 1 or 2 months. But then I was like, okay, I'll just go hike and I can only do one thing at a time, kind of in terms of like big commitments, you know. But yeah, having also, again, coming back to the social aspect, having good people around you and being... I think that's important, having this trust that to take your time in these moments is okay.
Yeah. And it will be okay too.
Yeah, yeah. But that's sometimes very hard, you know, to trust that things will work out.
Because people who are in that situation, they might lose that trust or never had it. How do you get that? How do you build that trust muscle, so to speak? Is that just something that has always been within you?
I do think I have some resilience, but I also get, I did get also nervous at some point. I think having close people to you, whether it's your best friend, your sister, your parents, your partner, who see you for who you are, because this is something I also struggle with, right? You define yourself through so much through what you do, whether it's your hobby or work, but then who are you without it?
Right? Exactly.
So for me, this has been something I've been working on a bit during the last year, is not in therapy, but I also did some sessions, but mostly through some experiences like the traveling or writing regularly down like what are things I care about, and investing more time in my friendships to see, okay, there is a core in me that is not defined by work. And once you trust that, then you're less dependent on these external things. But I think it takes a lot of work, especially in this kind of Western society where we live in. I feel work defines us quite a lot. No? I don't know how you feel.
Especially in Switzerland, I feel work is what makes you to a certain degree. And it's not always healthy.
No, and you feel, I think it's stupid, but you feel almost ashamed saying I'm unemployed.
Of course, yeah, of course, yeah.
I even felt that, you know, and I didn't want to go to the unemployment. I never went because I think I was like, I figure out this myself. No, and
absolutely.
This is, so I'm not perfect at all. It just, you know, it's but I'm working on it.
Exactly. But it helps, you know, for people who might be in a similar situation to first of all say, hey, it is okay to take a break. And it's also okay to go through the roller coaster, and eventually everything will turn out well. When one door closes, multiple others can open, right? So
And not, you know, a lot of things you do in this world, they have so much value, but you're not getting paid for it. But this is the tricky thing, like, that you can separate this. That's actually why I'm actually in favor of an unconditional income, because I think it takes away that pressure. And also, so many people who provide value in this society are not getting paid for this at all, or a lot of the work that's been done, you know, that makes our life better.
So but
it's still a very dominant mindset that only things that you get money for have value.
I mean, you see it in a social context, right? What's your name? Second question, what do you do usually?
Right. And you know, this is why I've started paying attention to not ask that anymore. And see, can we have an interesting conversation without talking about our jobs at all? And
of course.
I have quite a few conversations more abroad, but also here in Switzerland. You talk with someone for 3 hours and you never talk about what we're actually doing. So interesting.
Yeah.
I'd encourage people to do it. And not talk about your work either.
Absolutely.
Talk about something else. There's so much interesting stuff, you know?
Agree.
But it's, yeah, it's not something we learn easily, right? Yeah.
So now the only logical next question is, you know, after you left the Migro Pioneer Fund, what is next for you?
So right now I work, this is actually a funny development. I work with a project that I scouted myself in Migro Pioneer Fund in the healthcare sector. So it's a hospital at home project. Mm-hmm. And it's with some young doctors from Basel. And it's also an association at this point, but we're going to turn it into a company, probably a purpose company, mm-hmm. which is really interesting. So the idea is, or they're already doing that, they started doing that at the hospital in Arlesheim during COVID, that they saw people wouldn't come to the hospital, and then they looked at what are other countries doing, and they got some home monitoring gear and started going to people's homes. And I mean, not for people who are sick, but people who have diagnoses where you need to go to the hospital.
No.
Like when you have heart issues, heart insufficiency, or lung issues, like all kinds of diagnoses. If you have them nowadays, you need to go to the hospital. And it mm-hmm. usually takes you at least a week there until you can be released. So they started treating these things at home with small self-organized teams. So like taking out the hierarchy that we have mm-hmm. these days in hospitals, which is also, you know, the working condition is a reason why a lot of doctors and nurses quit. So, and also in my program that I did, so many doctors quit and they're not coming back to the work, which is a tragedy. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to scale this interprofessional approach they're taking, also focusing on care. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you're not leaving it all to technology, you're using it. But, and the first things we see now, first of all, people recover faster, 2 to 3 days, huge yeah. difference to the ones who stay in the hospital. They have less infections. There is also this gets very technical, medicine, but all kinds of other diagnoses that you develop in hospital, especially older people, like delirium and all of these things, where, you know, where they're in a delirium, they don't know where they are, mm-hmm. or they fall, all of that. It's more ecological, you have less waste, all of this. And the main thing is the people who work in that, the doctors, the nurses, they love working like this. You know, I say, finally, the patient is again the focus. I take the time. It's not about mm-hmm. reporting something so the management in the hospital can make more money. You know, it's actually putting the patient back in the center and making it more sustainable for everyone. So, you know, the healthcare sector is very tough. My mom is a nurse, my dad is a doctor, and I grew up with that.
You know the space.
Yeah, and I always wanted to do something about it, and I want to make it better, and everyone's saying, oh, this is a huge challenge, forget about it right now, because it's all about the money. But I'm trying to prove them wrong, and it's really fun so far. So I'm actually building up a startup again, and I love it. And,
amazing.
Yeah, and I'm still working with Singa, and I'm also involved in a film project, but mainly do this hospital at home project.
I see your excitement already.
Yes.
Fantastic.
No, I really love it. So that sounds, you know, I'm very, very happy with how things are right now. But I didn't see that when I ended my job at Migro Pioneer Fund.
You trusted the process.
Yeah, sometimes more, sometimes less, yeah. You know, like afterwards you can always talk about it easily. I think I distracted myself first with lots of vacation and then I got back and I was like, scary. But that's, you know, I don't know who said that, but as a quote I read that you just, in these kind of phases, I think it's, both things can be right. Either you just take a moment and not freak out and be patient, or you just do something. You start with meeting that person, meeting this person, going to some events. But, you know, not getting occupied by your fear. Mm-hmm. And I think that's generally coming back to your question about what's good and bad risk. I think if you do something out of fear, that's never really good. If you do things out of courage, that's
better.
The way.
Better place to be in.
Yes. So like there that. Was almost a point where I almost took a job out mm-hmm. of fear. This August, I was like, but I need to make money. And and what if I don't even see anything great? And in the end, I got such a stomach ache. So I told the person who I really appreciate, I said, I can't do it. I'm sorry. It's not right for me. I need more time, and I'm so glad, because I would have just done this out of fear, not out of motivation or courage. Like, yes, I want to do this.
I love that statement.
Yeah, so that's a small learning.
Selena, to wrap up the conversation today, we also have some rapid fire questions for you. I give you either a short question or different options to choose from, and ideally, you short answer in one answer. Sentence.
Sorry, yes.
That's perfect.
Also not my strength, but will do my best.
That's fantastic. Let's go. If, for whatever reason, you were to one day become a refugee yourself, what do you wish the people in your host country would do for you?
First of all, see me as a person with skills, with something to offer. Ideally, ask me to help them, do something for them, because I have something to offer. And then also connect me to others, invite me.
Basically exactly what Singa does in Switzerland, right?
Tries, yes.
Exactly. Are you more of a lone wolf or a team player?
Definitely a team player, but I need space to be creative. So I'm more the visionary type. So I'm not just a follower, but I'm a team player very much. Yeah. I don't like to do things on my own.
Are you more of an early bird or a night owl?
Definitely night owl. Yes.
What's one thing you wish you had done differently in your career, if any?
Yes, two things. I think take more risks when I was younger. Being less afraid of what others think, yeah. And take time to, in the right moments, to really be authentic, you know, to see what do I really want to do, what drives me. I think I wish I had done this earlier.
Yeah. That's a good segue, actually, to the next question. What makes you get out of bed in the morning?
So, yeah, I struggle to get out of bed. I don't like to do things before 9 o'clock. But what motivates me is people. I love to work with people, to come up with things, to mostly I love solving things, solving problems. And I love people who are thinking like that, not complaining, but saying, okay, how can we fix this? No matter how big the challenge is, this really what drives me.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have two more for you, two spontaneous ones. What does money mean to you?
I don't really like to deal with money, but money means, in this setup where I live, freedom.
No.
That I can do different things. And for me, autonomy and independence is so important. Actually, that's a big driver.
Nice.
Things. I don't want to be dependent on anyone or anything.
And the last one, what are you most proud of in your life?
Oh. Wow, that's a really tricky question. I think I'm proud of the good relationships that I have. It's different ones, can be also work relations, but the ones that really hold. Yeah. I'm proud of that. And, you know, Singa, I think, is a part that I am proud of, that I dare to do it and whatever will happen to it. But I'm proud of what, not necessarily what I did, but what we achieved together with everyone who's part of that. But in that sense of the human relationships, yeah.
Amazing. Perfect.
It means the most to me.
Selena, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a lot of fun. All the best with whatever you're tackling next. And I'm sure we're going to see and hear lots from you in the future.
We'll see. But thank you, Sylvan. I think it's really cool what you do. And yeah, it was really fun to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I wish you only the best.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, you can support us by rating our show on Apple Podcasts. This way, we can reach an ever-growing number of aspiring entrepreneurs.